Right now, we are joined on the phone by Tom Jensen, who is the director of public policy polling based out of Raleigh, publicpolicypolling.com, the website, and you can find him on Twitter at PPP Polls. Survey just out this week of North Carolina voters as we head into the primary, and particularly the Democratic primary for president and U.S. Senate and more. I've also got some numbers from a couple of key swing states or potentially key swing states as we head into the 2020 presidential election. So we'll get a look on where things stand there. Tom, thanks for being with us today.
Hey, Aaron, good to be with you.
So first of all, the new survey out of North Carolina coming out earlier this week, and obviously everyone is thinking about the Democratic presidential primary. Iowa's getting a lot of the focus right now. New Hampshire's getting a lot of the focus. But we've talked about this in the recent past. North Carolina's pretty early in the primary process. It is a swing state, so our votes in the primary is going to have likely a fairly significant impact. So where do things stand right now?
Well, Joe Biden has the lead in the state. He has 31%, Bernie Sanders is second at 18%, and Elizabeth Warren third at 15%. What's interesting, though, is that even though Biden does still have a double-digit lead, his standing has actually fallen from 39% the last time we pulled the primary in October, 8 points down to this 31% standing. And I think one of the things that was interesting in this poll is who's in fourth place. It's not Pete Buttigieg, who tends to be in the top four of the Democratic race. It's actually Michael Bloomberg, who's been spending a lot of money on television ads here. He's at 8%, and I'm guessing that most of that 8% Bloomberg's getting explains why Biden has dropped 8 points since October. I think they're tapping into a similar base. And then Buttigieg is in fifth place.
Now, I was, been in North Carolina for the last few weeks, except for last week I was in Michigan. And obviously that's a swing state, too, with a primary coming up. And in both North Carolina and Michigan, watching TV or watching the ads that pop up in front of YouTube videos, it's been nothing but Bloomberg ads, a couple of Tom Steyer ads, and that's about it. And I'm not seeing anything from the other candidates. How is that spending by Bloomberg in particular driving the national picture?
Well, it certainly shows the extent to which their personal wealth is being able to make them relevant. Even though Steyer wasn't doing that well in North Carolina on this poll, there were polls that came out from Fox News, which has a perfectly reputable polling arm, last week that found Steyer at double digits in both South Carolina and Nevada. And those are the states he's kind of focused on. He was actually in second place in Fox's South Carolina poll, and he was in third place in Fox's Nevada poll. I think that really shows that their ability to sort of crowd everybody else out certainly does mean that they might be bigger players down the line than maybe people would have expected at the outset of this race.
Getting back to the front runners, Biden and Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, Biden's numbers have slipped a little bit, but he's still got a double-digit lead in North Carolina. What's driving that?
It's definitely African-American support more than anything else. African-Americans are a third of the primary electorate in North Carolina. Biden's dominating with them here, just as he is nationally. He gets 47% of the African-American vote in North Carolina. Nobody else is over 16%. And I think that Biden is probably, because of that dynamic, going to run the table throughout the South. I think he'll win all the Southern primaries because he basically runs even with white voters, but then he dominates with black voters. And when you think about the Southern states, most of them have a very significant African-American chunk of the electorate. So I think what we're going to see happen is that maybe Iowa, New Hampshire, and Nevada end up being somewhat of a muddle. Right now, the polls show something approaching a four-way tie in all three of those states. But I think then Biden's probably going to win South Carolina by a very substantial margin. And that'll, I think, maybe be the first real clear victory that any of these folks have in the early states. And he'll definitely follow that up with some momentum by doing well in the southern states on Super Tuesday, and we'll see how he does in some of the other ones like California that have so many delegates.
Once those first primaries come in, the Iowa caucus in New Hampshire, and you mentioned Nevada, South Carolina too, we're going to start to see the media narrative taking shape on who's doing well and who's not. How much do we typically see that narrative affecting poll numbers in some of these later primary states?
Well, momentum definitely does have the potential to impact things. A lot of the time, if somebody does surprisingly well in Iowa or New Hampshire, like John Kerry in 2004, that really propels them to do well in the other states that come along later. One thing that I think is going to be sort of an interesting dynamic in North Carolina, though, is on the surface, you would look at the calendar and say, well, South Carolina votes 3 days before North Carolina. That could really have some momentum effect for Biden if he wins big in South Carolina. But the reality is that given what we know about Democrats voting early, half the Democratic primary electorate, at least, is already going to have voted before the South Carolina results come in. So that's sort of a different dynamic than we usually see. I personally, you know, generally tend to want to go vote on the first or second day of early voting, but I'm actually going to wait a little longer this year because I want to get a sense of what happens in Nevada, what's going to happen in South Carolina, because so much of voting in something like the Democratic primary race, part of it is, you know, ideally voting for who you like the best, but there's also an amount of strategy to it. If the person you like the best is sort of dead in the water after a few contests, you might want to vote for your second best choice and stuff like that. And that's complicated by North Carolina's early voting period being in the middle of all these other places voting.
Speaking with Tom Jensen, publicpolicypolling.com is the website for more information. You can get the numbers from this survey of North Carolina voters that we're talking about on the website right now. We've been talking about the presidential, the Democratic presidential race in North Carolina, but this was a survey of North Carolina voters that went down the ticket too. So where do things stand on those slightly lower ballot races, U.S. Senate, Lieutenant Governor, things like that?
Well, we're starting to see a little bit of separation in the U.S. Senate primary. Cal Cunningham has a 10-point lead over Erica Smith, 22-12, but there's still almost 70% of voters undecided. We found that Cunningham had 32% name recognition in the poll, and nobody else had over 20% name recognition. So it's definitely a field of candidates where folks aren't that well known. And I've had a few people ask me this week, oh, is that sort of weak for Cunningham to only be at 22% as the candidate who has the most institutional support and who has raised the most money? Actually looked back in the PPP archives and found that exactly 12 years ago this week, we did a Democratic U.S. Senate primary poll when Kay Hagan was running. And at this same time on the calendar, we found that 70% of voters were still undecided in the primary, very similar to where we are right now. And we found that Kay Hagan was leading the primary with 19%, very similar to the 22% that Cal Cunningham's leading the primary with now. So I don't think that Cunningham's standing really shows any sort of weakness when you consider that Hagan went on to not just dominate the primary, but also to win in the fall with similar poll numbers at this juncture. Lieutenant governor and state treasurer's races were the other two that we polled. There's about 80% of voters undecided in each of those. So sort of a reality check on how closely most voters really pay attention to state politics, and definitely means that the candidates who have enough money to really spend on voter outreach in the last few weeks of the campaign are going to be the ones who have a real shot at coming out of that with a win.
That Senate race is going to be interesting because, I mean, Cal Cunningham doesn't have a lot of name recognition. He's the front runner. Everyone else has even less. So whoever the Democratic nominee is going to be is not going to have a lot of name recognition. But we've talked about this. Neither does the incumbent, Tom Tillis, either. And I imagine that's just going to feed into what we've said all along. The dynamic of that Senate race is going to be driven by the national trends. If this ends up being a good year for Republicans, then the Republican will win. If it's a good year for Democrats, then the Democrat will win, right?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right about that.
Speaking again with Tom Jensen, those numbers are from a North Carolina survey. And again, you can get it online at publicpolicypolling.com. Turning to the national presidential picture, didn't get a chance to talk about this last week, but the numbers were out about a week ago. A survey that you did of a couple of potential swing states, Arizona and Iowa, of where the general presidential election numbers stand. What did you find and what does it say about the presidential race right now?
Well, I think the Arizona numbers are particularly interesting because Arizona potentially could be the state that decides the presidential race. There's basically seven real swing states, and Democrats have to win three of them in order to win this year. I think Democrats have a better than even chance in Pennsylvania and Michigan to get those back in their column. And I think after that, the two states that have the best chance of sort of flipping it to the Democrats or not flipping it to the Democrats because the Democrats fall just short are Wisconsin and Arizona. So Arizona is very important. Right now we find that Joe Biden is tied with Donald Trump in Arizona. Bernie Sanders is down by one. Elizabeth Warren's down by two. Pete Buttigieg is down by three. Now, what's interesting about Trump leading three of the four Democrats and being tied with Biden is that he's unpopular in Arizona. Only 46% of voters approve of the job he's doing, 52% disapprove. So you would think with a -6 approval rating like Trump has, that he would be favored to lose the state in the general election. But what we're seeing is that a lot of Democrats who maybe support one candidate in the primary for president are being stubborn about saying that they'll vote for one of the other candidates if that person ends up getting the nomination. So, for instance, maybe you love Biden, you say you'll vote for Biden over Trump, but you say you won't vote for Bernie over Trump. Or you love Bernie, you say you'll vote for Bernie over Trump, but you say you won't vote for Biden over Trump. When we look at the undecideds in each of those matchups where Trump's slightly ahead or tied, more than 80% of the undecideds in each of those matchups disapprove of Trump. And those undecideds also voted for Hillary Clinton in 2016, on average by about a 50 to 60 point margin. So if people ended up, if the undecideds ended up voting based on whether they approve or disapprove of Trump, the Democrats win by 4 to 6 points. If they end up voting based on whether they voted for Clinton, Trump, or Trump in 2016, the Democrats end up winning by 2 to 4 points. There are not enough voters who like Trump for him to get reelected. It's just a question of whether this division we're seeing that right now is letting Trump lead in Arizona, if that persists once Democrats have a candidate, or if the voters who don't like Trump unify around that eventual candidate. If they unify around that eventual candidate, Trump's done. If they don't unify around that eventual candidate, we're going to have a very close election.
So it really just comes down to Democratic Party unity?
It really does. Democratic Party unity in some sense, but maybe more broadly, people who are opposed to Trump unity, because we're also talking about needing the independents who disapprove of Trump to be comfortable with voting for the eventual Democratic nominee and that sort of dynamic. But as long as folks who dislike Trump don't stay at home, don't vote third party, that sort of thing, Trump's going to lose. His only path to reelection is to somehow get reelected with 45-46% of the popular vote because people voted third party or something like that. And if that doesn't happen, then he will lose.
And I know we've talked about this before, but I'm blanking from previous elections. If you're a voter heading into the election and you are not a fan, you disapprove of the incumbent, but you're undecided heading into the final days, what's typically the trend there? Where do those voters tend to fall?
They usually break against the incumbent, but the asterisk I should put on that is that a lot of Republicans were confident that Mitt Romney was going to win in 2012 because of that same dynamic. And those voters ended up splitting pretty evenly and didn't give Romney any sort of advantage. And Obama got reelected when a lot of people were saying, well, those people are going to move against Obama because he's the incumbent. So one thing I think we've definitely learned in the last decade is a lot of things that we quote unquote know to be true in U.S. presidential elections don't necessarily always turn out that way.
I'm speaking with Tom Jensen. You can get all of these numbers online at publicpolicypolling.com. I got to let you go, but before I do, you mentioned you typically vote on day one or two of the primary, and I know you've been following this race and therefore you've been following these candidates closer than just about anyone. So you can say names or not, it's up to you, but do you know who your top choice is right now? Do you know who your second choice is?
I'm probably between Elizabeth Warren and Joe Biden, but I have changed my mind three times over the course of this process, and I think that speaks to why this primary is so uncertain, is that even people who are like very high information voters don't necessarily have so somebody who they've picked and they're just strongly committed to. A lot of people are kind of shopping and willing to change their mind along the way.
PublicPolicyPolling.com for more information. And again, you can find them on Twitter at PPP Polls. Tom Jensen, thank you so much.
Thanks, Aaron.